Hey, Heat Nation! Welcome back to Heaters Gonna Heat, part of the OTG Podcast Network. Thank you for checking in, as always. I'm your host, Cobb Russell, here to chat a little about our favorite NBA team, the Miami Heat, who are currently playing with all the wrong kinds of history right now. Started off with a 3-0 lead. That is now down to 3-2 as Miami drops Game 5 last night in Boston. Another opportunity coming up Saturday. So, not quite in the doomsday scenario yet, but not feeling too great at the moment, admittedly. But, as usual, though, we'll still go through Game 5 recap last night, look ahead to Game 6 tomorrow. I'm still going to try to keep a positive outlook, because, you know, zooming out, this has still been an incredible run. But, if this is how it ends, oof. I digress, so we'll save that talk for if/when we're actually dead and buried. First off, though, Game 5 last night, losing at the Celtics 110-97 in a final score that does not properly reflect the game. It was closer to a 20-point blowout. For rotation real quick, Gabe Vincent was a late scratch, so the Heat went 9 deep with Haywood Highsmith getting minutes instead. That rotation did extend to 11 in garbage time. A little bit of good news, at least with Vincent, was that he did participate in shoot around. It seemed to be a situation where he seemed closer to being able to play, and then it wasn't until the shoot around where they're like, no, let's not risk this. Keep him for game six if needed. It's definitely going to be needed now. And then on the Celtics side of things, they still went 9 deep, mainly because Brogdon left with an injury in the first half. Elbow injury, though he wasn't needed too much, at least. So Peyton Pritchard filled in for him for a little bit in the third quarter before what was eventually garbage time throughout the fourth, where Boston also extended their rotation to 12. But that's rotation stuff. Recap of the game itself. I'll try to go through this as quick and painlessly as possible. A terrible start for Miami saw them cough up a 14-0 run early in the first quarter to put them down 5-20 halfway through the first. And this is a situation where I think Eric Spoelstra in the Heat got too cheeky keeping Kevin Love in the starting lineup. They were just running things through him, causing the defense to have to shift to help and leaving open corners. What kicked off that 14-0 run were three corner threes in a row, essentially just running the same action and having somebody sit in that corner to shoot an open three. So, like I said, like right from the start, you knew things were pretty bad. And Kevin Love was one of the big reasons why they got those open threes. So he got yanked at when the Heat were down 5-15, but the Celtics were already hitting threes, they were already going, and they kept that run going until they were up 15. The Heat and Celtics did trade some buckets throughout the remainder of the first, but at the end of it, the Heat were still down 15, 20-35, in large part to 6 turnovers in the first quarter, and Boston going 7 of 12 from 3-point range. So 21, like they outscored Miami alone just from 3-point range. So yeah, really bad first quarter. Second quarter, though, the Heat did have a few opportunities to get the lead down to single digits about halfway through. And then instead, they gave up a 14-5 run to the Boston Celtics that would extend the Celtics' lead up to 20. Heat trimming it down just a little bit to 17 at the halftime. Coming out into the second half, we did get some adjustments by Spo and the staff. Highsmith would start in place of Kevin Love in the third. Cody Zeller was cut out entirely in the second half, and Kevin Love was slotted in as the backup five, which almost certainly an adjustment that was a half too late because Miami was already in a huge hole to begin with. But third quarter itself, Miami could not string together any stops in the third to get on a run. Boston just keeping pace throughout the whole quarter, lead hanging around 20 points before ending at Celtics up 18 going into the fourth. And I specify the stops there because typically when you're getting blown out, there's one or two ways to get back into a game nowadays. You either lock in on defense and shut the opponent down, or you rain a bunch of threes and hope that the variance goes your way. Miami got up 3 3-point attempts in the third quarter. So they definitely were not trying to shoot a bunch of threes in order to get back into the game. They were trying to do it on the defensive end. They just could not get it done. And then fourth quarter itself, Celtics got up 24 early in the fourth, which effectively removed any doubt for what the outcome of this game was going to be. Miami never got the lead to single digits. They got it to 10 one time with like a minute left, but that was completely garbage time. Because the last few minutes of the game were just garbage time entirely. But Miami never got the lead to single digits, and we eventually got to our final score, 110-97. But yeah, like I said, 13-point lead at the end of the game, but when it mattered earlier in the quarter, Miami was getting blown out by 20-plus. So that kind of makes two blowouts in a row. Actually, this one even worse than the previous one, because at least in Game 4, we had an opportunity where the game was within 5 in the fourth quarter, early in the fourth quarter, before things then got out of hand. But this one, like I mentioned, never even got to single digits after the first quarter. Not a fun recap. So takeaways from this game now then. First one, just to give them their props, it took putting them into an 0-3 hole. So let's not overlook that part. But since then, the Celtics have been 100% locked in. They look like a legit title contender now with their backs up against the wall. They're knocking down threes. They're playing hard defense. They're pushing it in transition. They're locked in now, right? And that has to be respected. That has to be expected going forward, that this is a legit team that Miami will have to put down. They are not going to roll over like we had hoped they would after that Game 3 blowout. That's just the reality of the situation now. Celtics are locked in. Who's not locked in right now is Jimmy Butler. 14 points, 5 rebounds, 5 assists, 2 steals on 5 of 10 from the field. Very little field goal attempts. 0-2 from 3-point range, and a lot of those are just like those really flat pull-up threes that never look too great and don't really seem in the flow of the offense. 4-6 from the free throw line. A game worst minus 24. And I think maybe the most important of all is just his general demeanor in Game 4 and 5. And what I mean by that is just the way that a team will reflect the way that their leader is acting. We see this all the times in sports organizations, life in general, right? That the organization will sometimes reflect what the leader is doing. And in the last two games, Miami has played lackadaisical, sloppy, and they've gotten blown out. Jimmy, in turn, has looked lackadaisical, sloppy, and for the most part indifferent to getting blown out. He's acting like, oh, this will be fine. This is not fine now. If this Celtics team is, like I just talked about, they are locked in. So any of these games are not fine. This team can come back and be the first team to overcome a 3-0 hole if Jimmy Butler is just going to be in chill mode and not the killer playoff Jimmy Butler that got us here in the first place. Jimmy might have been disinterested. Bam was straight up bad. This final stat line does not look too bad. 16 points, 8 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 steals, 1 block on 8 of 15 from the field. So he did get a good amount of field goal attempts up. No free throws, though, which that part is a little bit lack of aggression. But the bad parts of it, 6 turnovers. So again, Bam having a very bad turnover game. Game 4 was, I think, 0 assists, 4 turnovers. This game is 3 assists, 6 turnovers. It's just too many. It's been stuff that I've seen out of Bam before where sometimes he has a bit of a shaky dribble and can get that ball poked out. So if the Celtics have homed in on that, then the Heat have to find other ways to get Bam shots that don't involve him dribbling. But beyond that, the 6 turnovers, 10 of his 16 points came in the third quarter as well. So the game was already out of hand then. When the game was actually mattering, Bam was not getting points up on the board. The defensive end was still, for the most part, really good. Bam can consistently bring on a defensive end. That part is at least still there. But we need Bam to be a two-way force, not a one-way force, if the Heat are going to advance to the finals. Next takeaway, though. Another game that Miami could not defend the three. Celtics, 16-39, so, you know, close enough to that 40 volume mark that they're trying to get to. But 16-39, good for 41%, to the Heat's 9 of 23, 39% themselves. So the percentage is not too off, but the volume's way off. Celtics attempting 16 more threes than Miami. knocking down 7 more than Miami did, plus 21 on three-point shooting alone. That could have been the game had Miami made a bigger, better emphasis on not having that be such a disparity. We'll give the Celtics some credit, though, as the series has gone along. They started out not getting very many three-point attempts up, and then they have slowly gotten their way up to where they want to be, around that 40 mark. It's on Miami now to find a way to tamper that back down, because now, I mean, that has been one of the big deciding factors in the last two games, has been the Celtics shooting roughly 40% on 40 attempts a game. After that next takeaway, another game with sloppy turnover problems. Heat losing the turnover battle 16-9. And with it, points off of turnovers 19-27. And then most egregious of it, Bam and Lowry accounted for 10 of those 16 turnovers. That's your starting point guard with Gabe Vincent out, and actually about your only ball-handling guard left on the roster with Oladipo and Hero also out as well. And then your playmaking big, who's supposed to be one of the best playmakers in the league after Nikola Jokic, and 6 turnovers, just terrible. And we've talked before about how Boston in particular wants to take live ball turnovers from Miami and attack in transition before the Heat can set up their defense. That's the second game in a row now they've given up 27 points off of turnovers. So like with the threes, this series has slowly started to swing things back to the way that Boston wants to dictate things, which has put Miami on the wrong side of 2 blowouts now. But with the other part of it as well, Miami only getting 9 turnovers off of Boston, so Boston doing a better job of taking care of the ball. Miami, like, their defense was predicated upon getting turnovers and generating that into offense. Exactly what Boston does, just not with as much youth and athleticism that the Celtics have that the Heat do not. But where I'm going with that, though, is just Heat defense needing to do a better job of forcing the Celtics into turnovers as well, or maybe trying to find some better opportunities to get into passing lanes or dig into dribblers. Next takeaway, this one's, I'll make this one like my last probably bad one. Miami somewhat able to keep up on the boards. They did lose the rebounding battle 36-37, but that was fairly close. Offensive rebounding, they lost 10-12, but again, fairly close. Where they could not win in that kind of battle was second chance points, losing that 7-17. So Celtics doing a great job capitalizing on their second chance points. Miami, not as much. To attempt to do some positive takeaways from this game, at least, Duncan Robinson, really good bounce back game because he had a very bad game 4. And after game 4, it was one of the questions that I had was, do you cut Duncan out of the rotation? After tonight, no, definitely not. A team high 18 points, which that also tells you a little bit right there, right? Duncan Robinson was a team high for points, and he didn't even crack 20. 18 points, 4 rebounds, 9 assists, also led the team in assists, on 7 of 10 from the field, 2 of 3 from 3-point range, 2 of 2 from the free throw line, a team high plus 7, and Duncan Robinson looked like he gave a damn, looked like he wanted to be out there competing, was trying to force rotations. Maybe that's just him trying to show Spoelstra, hey, I am the one that you do not cut from this rotation. I very clearly bounced back from game 4. And in that regard, yes, he did. And if that can carry into the next game 6, hey, give Duncan his minutes 100%. And then last takeaway, Haywood Highsmith really solid in his first non-garbage time minutes this series. 15 points, 2 rebounds, 1 assist, 2 steals on 6-9 from the field, 3-4 from 3-point range, though no free throws. But played from the second quarter onward, so ended up playing 36 minutes. Might be a little bit concerned about his legs, but he did look really solid out there, I felt. And yeah, obviously he started the second half, so that speaks to a level of confidence that Spoelstra probably has in him as well. Actually, speaking of that, just the last one again, I mentioned a little bit earlier, Spoelstra probably a little too late doing the rotation adjustments, but in the second half, it's kind of hard to tell, because in the second half, Miami did, for the most part, play Boston even, but that's really easy to do when you're already down 20 and the other team isn't putting in as much effort. So maybe a little A, maybe a little B. I look at the third quarter and say they couldn't get the stops that they needed. So it's not like you're out of the woodwork and you've solved the problems just by tweaking those rotations. And with that, I have talked 15 minutes about this game already. So we'll wrap this up there. And just to say this, the 3-0 lead is now trimmed down to 3-2. The Heat will get another chance on Saturday, but the pressure is mounting rapidly. Looking ahead to Game 6 now, real quick beforehand, let's take a look at the injury report. Tyler Hero still has not gotten any updates since he was listed for non-contact work earlier in the week. Though there is one media update where he was in shoot-around at the Boston Celtics yesterday. I still don't think he comes back in this series, not at this high of stakes right now. But good to see him shooting around at least. And if the Heat can advance to the finals, feel pretty confident he can make a return at some point in that series. Vincent was a late scratch for Game 5, but like I mentioned, he still did shoot around and still went through the motions and looked just to be a late scratch and be like, hey, we're still up 3-1. Maybe we can steal this without Vincent. They apparently couldn't, but it seemed to be the kind of move where you take a gamble and you say, hey, if we lose Game 5, then we lost the gamble, and he should be back for Game 6. So I do feel a little bit more confident for him being back for Game 6. And then that's it for the Heat side. On the Celtics side, Malcolm Brogdon listed day-to-day with an elbow injury, and was not very effective in Game 5, but he wasn't really needed because other players were doing more of the damage. So if he ends up being out for Game 6, that could be significant if Miami doesn't get blown out from the start, especially if Peyton Pritchard starts picking up minutes like he did in the third quarter. Though, again, like that was also still a blowout situation that he did. Actually, if I were to guess, I would probably say that if Malcolm Brogdon is not available, that they just trim the rotation down to 7 and don't even fuck around with Peyton Pritchard. That's all for the injury report. Let's look ahead now. Game 6 at Miami this Saturday. What's at stake? A win ends this series. Miami advances to play Denver in the finals, and they do not become the first team to blow a 3-0 lead. Definitely not want that on us. A loss would bring this series to a winner-takes-all Game 7 in Boston on Monday night. So what can Miami do to avoid that anxiety-inducing Game 7? So in terms of adjustments, I think they've already started implementing them, cutting Zeller out of the lineup. This does not seem like a series for him, unfortunately. So we look back at like the first two series that Miami had, where against the Milwaukee Bucks, they needed the size from Zeller and Love. They needed Love to start and Zeller to be the backup five to have that extra size. Same thing in the Knicks series as well, because of the way that the Knicks emphasize crashing the offensive glass. Against the Celtics, it's just not as needed. They need mobility. They need perimeter defense. They need like rim running or spacing the floor. So in that regard, Cody Zeller he's just not as needed for the series. So that's why you cut him out. You move Kevin Love from the starting lineup where he's just getting boat raced out there, and you move him to be the backup five. That already got implemented in Game 5. I expect that to keep going in Game 6. After that, there's a bit of a debate who ends up being the starting four. Because, like, at first glance, you'd probably say Caleb Martin. Hey, you promote Caleb Martin. He was the starting four all year. And I do think there's a solid argument for that. But I still think it ends up being Haywood Highsmith, because that's what we saw in Game 5. Spoelstra could have gone with Caleb Martin to start the second half, but he went with Haywood Highsmith, because that keeps Caleb Martin in that familiar role off the bench and just lets Highsmith just try to be... I mean, originally he was supposed to be like a P.J. Tucker. That was the archetype that the Heat were trying to develop him into. So, hey, here's your chance at the starting four, man. Show us what you got. And then the other person I think is still worth mentioning, at least, because he did start, I guess, kind of as the starting four in one game earlier in this series, this postseason, Duncan Robinson. So I could see an argument where you say, hey, Duncan, really great Game 5. You can start the game off running Bam Duncan two-man game and see if that can juice your offense and not have them fall so far behind from the start. So I could see an argument for that, but Duncan has had a pretty solid role off the bench this series. So in the effort to keep as many people in their roles as possible, I think it's Martin Robinson still off the bench, Highsmith getting the starting nod, just try to space the floor, be great on defense, maybe do what you can, and then hopefully not get in the way of Jimmy and Bam, who, fingers crossed, will have really great games. Next adjustments for Miami, run Boston off the three-point line like they did early in the series, even if it means giving up a little bit more in the paint, right? Like, you look at game one and game two, the Celtics really did blast Miami. I think it was like 50 or 60 points in the paint, something ridiculous, but they were only getting up like around 30 three-point attempts a game. And those are games that were close enough that Miami could then close it out in the fourth and steal those games. Aim for something more similar to that, because letting Boston shoot a ton of threes, they look real comfortable out there, and once they get comfortable, they start to drop. And once they drop, it's really hard to keep up with them. So if need be, sacrifice a little bit of the paint to defend the three-point line, because, hey, at the end of the day, twos are worth less than three. Next one for Miami, just please stop with the sloppy turnovers. And I'm especially looking at Kyle Lowry and Bam Adebayo for this, because they've been the most egregious ones with turnovers over the last two games. That's just life for Boston. That's easy points before Miami can set up their defense. It's wasted offensive possessions by Miami when they need all the offense that they can muster. It's just, I don't think I see a way that Miami loses the turnover battle and wins a game this series. Maybe barring like a massive three-point explosion or a giant Jimmy game. But like the point there's still being, they put themselves at a massive disadvantage when they lose that turnover battle. And then last adjustment, and a little bit on someone I just mentioned, Jimmy Butler. It's time to put on the cape, man. It's time to back up all that talk. We need Jimmy to set the tone early. The team will follow. Probably need him to have a 40-point bomb in order to put the Celtics away. Like I mentioned earlier, he just has not looked interested in Game 4 and Game 5, and that I think that reflects in his shot selection, and then it reflects in how the team kind of responds to that. And then look at how the outcomes of the game went, right? Game 4 ended up in a blowout when they could have won that one and finished the series off. Again, a reminder, they had a 9-point lead after going into half of Game 4. And then Jimmy, not being interested, I mean, lackadaisical in the second half, left things open for Boston to get back into the series. This could have been over Tuesday. Now we're playing on Saturday. So the onus is on Jimmy Butler, the star player of this team, the guy that dropped 56 points in a Milwaukee Bucks series to help get them even to this point in the first place. This is the moment. This is everything. Rise to it. Otherwise, the shitstorm is going to be brutal. And then to a lesser but still significant degree, Bam Adebayo as well. I don't put as much of the onus on him because Bam, like, at his ideal, Bam is a two-way force. And to his credit, the defensive end has still been there. It's been, hey, can the offensive end be there as well? Versus ideally for Jimmy, he's a nuclear bomb dropping 40-plus on the opposition and snatching their soul out of them, right? So Bam's been a little bit closer to his ideal. He just needs to fix the offensive end and get back to what he was doing earlier in the series. But Jimmy has not been anywhere near his ideal these last two games, so the onus is more on him. Show up game six, finish this series off, so then we can just be done entirely. Regardless of the game, though, I will be too busy on Sunday with previous plans. So I'll be back on Monday, hopefully to recap a Game 6 win, if not to doom prophesize about Game 7 Monday night. Really hope it does not come to that. But hey, if it does, that's just how life goes. I do thank you for hanging around today, though. That'll be all for this episode. Please, if you can, follow the pod off of Twitter at HeatersHeating and myself at Kyle_B_Russell. Also, check out the other great pods we have at OTG Basketball. The Celtics podcast over there are having a great time currently. Links for everything are in the show notes, as usual. I'll be back on Monday. Until then, though, I still hope you have a great weekend, Heat Nation. Remember to smile. It's still just sports at the end of the day. And enjoy yourselves. Later.